When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
This is the Financial Exchange with Barry Armstrong and Chuck Zada. Your exclusive look at business and financial news affecting your day, your city, your world. Stay informed and up to date about economic and market trends. Plus, get breaking business news every day. The Financial Exchange proudly supports the Disabled American Veterans Department of Massachusetts. Learn how you can support our great American heroes by taking part in this year's DAV 5K on Saturday, November 6th. Visit DAV5K.Boston for more information. Now, it's time for the Financial Exchange with Barry Armstrong and Chuck Zada.
Netflix shares are down almost 8% on news that they missed expectations as it relates to subscriber growth. They grew their subscribers in the last quarter by 4 million worldwide, and I think the expectation was 6 million. Good morning, everybody. It's Barry and Chuck with you here for the second hour of the Financial Exchange, and they're still the 900-pound gorilla in the room, but growth seems to be slowing down, and investors don't like that news.
Well, as we talked about last year, remember in the end of Q1 and through Q2, they had a couple monster quarters of subscriber growth. And Reed Hastings basically said this is something where we had a ton of growth last year that was pulled forward from future years because people needed stuff to do during the pandemic. And as such, we're probably not going to have quite as robust growth as we emerge from it. And I think that's what we're seeing here. It's something where a year ago you had 15.8 million subscribers in Q1 of last year, again, because we were right at the start of the pandemic and people needed stuff to do. Mm-hmm. This year, investors were expecting north of 6 million new subscribers, and they got about half of that. So it's a case where I don't think this is inherently bad for Netflix, the company, because they're still a growing company. But I do think it signals something about expectations and the fact that as we emerge from the pandemic and behavior normalizes, that growth is going to taper. And they're also now in a world that is much more competitive with a growing number of additional streaming services. And that competition is something that they're going to have to deal with in a way that they really haven't had to before. It's a different landscape today than it was even 24 months ago before Disney Plus and all the other entrants into that space.
To their credit, they are very profitable. You know, it was only a few years ago, Chuck, where we were talking about how they were losing billions of dollars every year. Now they're making billions of dollars every quarter. And, you know, they've got basically that residual income stream. And, you know, they may have had some outflow in terms of subscribers, but for the most part, people open up a Netflix account and they don't cancel it.
Yeah, count me as one of them. And it's not something I don't use it necessarily every day, but I get pretty consistent use out of it. And I think the more important thing is that my parents get consistent use out of it. And that's what it's really all about, isn't it? Sharing it with family in order to pay your parents back for the cost of college. So thanks, Mom and Dad. Appreciate it. We only have 110 years to go and we'll be all even. So
yeah,
we're getting there.
I have noticed that their children's menu isn't bad. You know, like when I'm babysitting, I'll use Netflix. My go-to is Disney, but Netflix has some good stuff for babies, you know, and for little kids to watch.
I love that the two things that you watch are cartoons and documentaries.
Yeah.
That's your niche.
It is. It truly is. You can tell everybody I'm multidimensional, right?
It's a barbell approach. It's a barbell approach. You know, really far on one end of the spectrum, just loosey-goosey, and then really serious and fact-focused on the other. There's not much middle ground there, you know? It's good.
Yeah. Hey, let's talk about Apple's unveiling yesterday. They unveiled a subscription podcast. I'm not sure that that's going to be terribly popular. But they also came out with their latest iPad. And, you know, I used to have an iPad. But with the phones being so large, I never use an iPad. Do you use an iPad, Chuck?
All the time.
You do?
all the time. It's been a huge resource for me with, you know, combination of, you know, working remotely and being at home. It's been, I got a new one. I think it was last February when they announced the previous update, because my old one was from, I think, 2013. So it was, you know, 7 years old, and just it was burnt at that point. It was just wasn't running stuff very well. So I got a new one last year, and I use it a ton at this point, probably way more than I should, if I'm being honest. My screen time has just gone through the roof in the last year. It's not great. But the interesting thing here, number one, is that with these new iPad Pros, they're taking the chips from their laptops and desktop computers, their internally designed M1 chip, and they are putting that into this iPad Pro. So it's just going to be a monster in terms of performance. If you get one of these new iPad Pros and get one of the attachable keyboards that you can have for it, it's a laptop replacement and more, just because of all the functionality. You're not really missing anything in terms of functionality if you get one of the attachable keyboards for it. So I think that this is a really interesting move on that front.
These How much is it going to cost?
I believe, so these are their top line ones. The 11-inch ones, I think, start at $700, and I think that the 12.9-inch ones start at either $1,100. I'm sorry. Okay. And so you've got those. Then the other thing that they announced were their new iMacs, which, do you remember the original iMac, Barry?
Yeah.
The funny colored ones. Everything. Yeah. So they brought back all the colors, and it's all these different colors now. And this, in my mind, we were talking earlier this week, Matt, I think it was on Monday, that we were talking about how baggy jeans are coming back, the JNCOs are coming back.
Yes, we were.
Now you've got these multicolored iMacs that are coming back. Barry, we're going back to the 1990s. The 90s are back.
I'm going to fit right in. You know, that was my decade.
Yeah. Huge nostalgia value here. It reminds me of the computer lab at my school that was lined with all those colorful iMacs.
The 90s are coming back.
When I read about what they're doing on the podcast side and on the music side, it reminds me kind of what Amazon does with a lot of their clients, right? Like Spotify is looking at what Apple's doing and saying, "Hey, you guys are stealing our lunch." Is there some of that going on where Apple's just basically stealing ideas from their competitors?
Of course. Imitation is the greatest form of flattery. And with these companies, the issue isn't that they're imitating. It's that they also have market power and control the marketplaces on their platform such that they can squash any competition. So, there's no doubt that they're taking features and pulling this and that from other companies. That's not the issue. That happens. There's no one at this point that has a truly original idea. Human beings have been around for a while. No one's coming up with something completely new. The issue is, do you have market power such that you can prevent competitors from existing in that market on
and
a level
being
playing
successful
field?
And being successful.
And that's where the issue is, because no one comes up with a completely new idea. It doesn't exist. We're all standing on the shoulders of people who came before us or people who are next to us. It's just, well, are you doing it in a way that allows for competition, or are you doing it in such a way that you squash competition? And the latter is something I think that we should try to remove, because I'm a big believer in competition and competitive markets producing better outcomes.
Yeah. Well, you think about, like, just an example, right? A consumer goes out and buys a Fitbit, and then they realize, well, gee, it's not quite as good as the Garmin. And then they go out and buy the Garmin. And the Garmin seems to get hacked a lot and fail a lot. And all of a sudden, they end up with an Apple Watch. And the Apple Watch is better than the Fitbit and the Garmin put together. You know, I've seen that transition over the last 5 years. And it does make you wonder as to whether or not Apple is kind of undermining their competition. It's one thing to compete, right, on a level playing field. But you ask yourself, well, gee, are they doing the best they can to put Garmin out of business or to put Fitbit out of business? Fitbit was actually bought by Google, though, weren't they?
They were, yes.
Yeah.
In another deal that probably shouldn't have been allowed to happen.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm getting to is, you know, like, these tech companies are so big and so powerful that a lot of, like Spotify, how does Spotify compete with Apple? I mean, it's Spotify. I have a Spotify account, but how much longer am I going to have it before it starts to fail or it's not as cool as the Apple product? You know, I'm just not sure that this is a healthy environment where you have, you know, Apple, Google, and Amazon controlling, you know, the tech world.
But, I agree. Yeah, I agree.
Let's take a break, and when we come back, we will be playing trivia. Put your thinking cap on. Trivia is next on the Financial Exchange.
This is your home for the latest business and financial news in New England and around the country. This is the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
A major concern for most retirees is how to protect your assets from the estate tax. Hi, this is Chuck Zotta from the Armstrong Advisory Group. While the federal estate tax exemption was increased to nearly $12 million via the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, President Biden's tax plan proposes reducing the exemption amount to $3.5 million, the same level it was at back in 2009. In addition, the president's plan would raise the top estate tax rate to 45%. So how will these proposed changes affect your estate? We've written a brand new guide for the month of April that'll break it all down for you. It's called The Biden Tax Plan, Fact or Fiction, and it'll walk you through these proposals as well as several other potential adjustments to the federal tax code. Call 800-393-4001 right now and get your free guide today. That's 800-393-4001. You can also download it from our website, armstrongadvisory.com.
Securities offered through Securities America Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC, and advisory services offered through Securities America Advisors Incorporated, Charles Zotta representative. Armstrong Advisory Group and the Securities America companies are unaffiliated.
Wall Street's volatility has been off the charts over the last 2 years, but markets have still reached record highs. Will we see more growth this year? Stay with us for breaking business news all morning long, only here on the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
Trivia is brought to you by Southern Airways Express. Flights to Nantucket resume on May 26th with a brand new schedule from Hanscom Field. Take the easy route to Nantucket. Fly Southern Airways Express from Norwood, Providence, New Bedford, and now Hanscom Field off of Route 128. Fast flights, low fares. Book today at iFlySouthern.com. What world-famous actor was born in New York City this week in the year 1940? And is one of the few performers to have won an Oscar, an Emmy, and a Tony Award. If you know the answer to that, text it to us at 63566. And the eighth correct answer that we received to that question will win a $50 gas card. But more importantly, that individual will be entered into a drawing for a pair of round-trip airplane tickets to Nantucket on Southern Airways Express. What world-famous actor was born in New York City this week in 1940 and is one of the few performers to have won an Oscar, Emmy, and a Tony Award. 63566, include the keyword I fly in your answer. Chuck, you know, we were joking, gosh, it was only a few weeks ago, about that ship that got caught in the strait over in the Middle East. But there are supply chain issues going on now. Some are related to that, but just it seems like the supply chain globally is breaking down.
Yeah, there are a few different issues that have hit supply chains. Obviously, we had the boat stuck in the middle of the Suez Canal, which was comical, ridiculous, but also really, really unfortunate that it happened at a time when supply chains were already stressed. And so what you have here, there are a few different places where supply chains are running into issues. The first is on the raw material side of things. And this is no more, the place where you see this the most is in housing with what's going on with lumber prices. Mm-hmm. Last fall, a lot of lumber mills made the decision, hey, there's been good demand through the summer. There's good demand this fall. We don't anticipate good demand continuing into next year. And so we're going to scale down some operations. In addition to that, you had some lumber mills that had shut down over the last couple of years just because of low demand to begin with. What did we end up with this year? Really robust demand for housing. And so we've got this lumber shortage, which, again, it's not a timber shortage. Remember, timber and lumber are two different things. Timber is trees. There's plenty of trees to cut down in all, you know, mm-hmm. Again, you look at where you have availability for timber in the forests that are set for forestry, and you have plenty of trees and plenty of people to cut them down. The issue is in lumber mill capacity. And so you've got this shortage now of lumber to be used for construction. So what you're actually seeing now, I was talking with a friend of mine who's an architect. If you ever want to see a profession that you pay an awful lot for schooling and it's just a really tough profession to break into, look into architecture. Mm-hmm. But I digress, because he was telling me that one of the things that they're seeing in design now is that because of lumber prices moving the way they have, you're seeing both for single family construction and for larger projects, a lot of movement now to try to reduce the amount of lumber in those projects to get costs down and also to be able to move them along because of supply chain disruptions. Then you've also got the semiconductor shortage that's going on, and that's affecting every industry because you've got semiconductors in really just about everything now. It's rare to find something that doesn't have some kind of computerized component to it. I mean, sure, you could talk about pens or paper or something like that. But
think about your car. Think like a car has, what, 400 or 500 chips in it?
Not even cars, but we were talking last week about a company that works in they're a company that pours cement. And one of the things that they need is a sensor that detects when the cement is hardening and the temperature of it so they can know exactly what's going on within the cement. They can't get enough semiconductors to make those sensors. And so a cement pouring company is having trouble, you know, because of supply chain issues. You've got an example from this article in the Wall Street Journal. Oklahoma restaurant paying almost $200 for a case of gloves that normally cost $40. Medical device maker is tweaking products to offset higher costs from plastic because you don't have as much oil refining going on because demand has been down. I mean, these are the kinds of things where they'll sort themselves out because they're largely caused by a rapid shutdown in the economy last year and a rapid restart in the time since then. This will sort itself out in the next 8 to 12 months. By this time next year, we won't be talking about supply shortages that are at least as dire as what they are right now.
Do you include chips in that, Chuck? Because the reports I'm reading say we could have chip shortages for the next 5 years.
I think that chips are a slightly different issue just because of how long it takes to ramp up production and especially adding new capacity. It's a longer term issue. So that's one area where there is a longer problem. But I don't think we're going to be dealing with lumber shortages a year from now. I don't think we're going to be dealing with shortages for gloves a year from now. I don't think we're going to be dealing with plastic shortages a year from now. But the chip issue is a different one that, again, it could take a couple of years, if not longer, to deal with. But the raw material side of things, for better or for worse, there's a reason why we call these things commodities. It's because you can scale up and multiple producers can get in and produce similar components easily. That's not the case in the chip market. The chip market, it's much more tailored products for specific usage, whereas, hey, if you tell me how much lumber to build, or not build, if you tell me how much lumber to produce, great, I know how to produce lumber. I take raw timber and I cut it into the size and shape and treat it the way it needs to be, and I ship it out. It's one size fits all. I know that's a slight exaggeration, but there's a reason why we call these things commodities, is because they're interchangeable with one another. Lumber from one forest is largely the same as lumber from another forest of the same kind of tree. So these are the things that, you know, will sort themselves out. The chip issue is different because it's not as commoditized. It's a much more tailored product space.
Short sellers are often considered to be kind of the sharks of Wall Street. You know, the short selling is a situation where you bet against a company, which is contrary to how most investors do their work. And short sellers have really been sitting on the sideline because of they've been getting crushed by the Reddit crowd. I'm not sure that's healthy for us in the long term. It's kind of interesting to watch in the short term. We've seen a number of hedge funds and family offices get decimated because of because of Reddit. But in the long term, Chuck, what are the ramifications if short sellers aren't willing to play in the pool?
Well, I think there comes a certain point when the risk reward skews back in their favor. And what I mean by that is, once you have enough bullishness, enough excess bullishness in a market, if short sellers are able to take targeted positions and in certain ways, they can start to generate alpha through those positions again. It's not something where in this market right now, again, you don't want to be anywhere near it if you're a short seller, and largely you've seen that exit. But at some point, the risk reward skews back in their favor, and that's where things actually get very, very tough for individuals that are in overextended stocks that should have been shorted all along. Mm-hmm. And again, it skews back in that fashion. But yeah, it's one of the things where if you don't have...
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
A market of individuals that are willing to bet against companies. You could see further frothiness and bubbly, you know, while things go here for a little bit.
Markets are up this morning. The Nasdaq's up 75 points. The Dow's up 143, and the S&P is up 18. In the next segment, we'll tell you who won our trivia contest. We'll obviously give you the correct answer, and then we're going to be talking about this Super League. I'm not a big soccer guy, but Chuck Zotta is, and he's going to tell us about the fallout from the Super League.
The Financial Exchange is live on Facebook, so make sure to like our page and watch the guys break down the latest on the markets every day beginning at 10 on the Financial Exchange Radio Network. Financial news, business news, entertainment. If you don't think they all go together, you need to listen to our brand new podcast called Dumb Questions for Smart Money, presented by the Financial Exchange Radio Network. Subscribe today on Apple, Spotify, and all your favorite podcast apps.
Born on April 25th, 1940 in New York City, Al Pacino is on the short list of performers who have won the acting Triple Crown, earning an Oscar, an Emmy, and a Tony Award. The most recent film that Pacino appeared in was the Netflix original The Irishman, and that was produced in 2019, or at least it was released in 2019.
I was wrong on this one. I had guessed De Niro. I figured it was a 50-50 shot. It had to be one of the two. It had to be one of the two. But the winner on this and the person who had it right was Dave from Norton, Massachusetts. And so Dave is taking home a $50 gas card and is also registered to win the pair of round-trip tickets to Nantucket on Southern Airways Express, which we give away on Friday's show. Trivia today brought to you by Southern Airways Express. Flights to Nantucket resume on May 26th, a little over a month away, with a brand new schedule from Hanscom Field. Take the easy route to Nantucket, fly Southern Airways Express from Norwood, Providence, New Bedford, and now Hanscom Field off I-95. Fast flights, low fares. Book today at iFlySouthern.com.
Chuck, for those of us who are not big soccer fans, can you explain to us what this big deal is about the Super League? And I know John Henry's involved in it, and I just don't understand. It sounds like it's a huge issue in the rest of the globe, and a lot of Americans, you know, soccer is kind of down the ladder in terms of sports that they follow.
Yeah, this is massive. This is probably the biggest sports PR and actual failure in, I would have to say, at least the last 25 or 30 years, maybe more.
Why do you call it a failure?
Oh, so here's what happened. So for the last year or two, there's been some chatter and buzz that a lot of the top teams from different leagues are unhappy with the way that those leagues are structured. And long story short is that some of these, quote, elite teams feel that they would be able to make more money if they were able to simply compete with other elite teams, because they'd be able to get a monster TV deal, have access to all the best players, yada, 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 and so on and so forth down the line. So the idea of this Super League was they wanted to take the top 15 to 20 teams in Europe. And again, top is, it's subjective, but basically,
how many teams are in Europe now total, Chuck? Like, if you add up all the
thousands,
no, but professional leagues, like
thousands.
There are thousands,
it's,
Barry.
So here's this is the key piece.
It can't be
about
thousands of teams. I mean, the NHL's, you know, the NFL's got 32 teams. I mean, like, how can there be thousands of soccer
Europe
teams?
Europe alone, I mean, sorry, England alone has over 200.
Right. There are different leagues across different countries.
So here's how it works. Most leagues in Europe operate under what they call a pyramid structure, which is not a pyramid scheme. It's not a Ponzi scheme.
Okay.
But what they do is they have different tiers of classification. So in England, just as an example, the top tier is what's known as the Premier League. Okay. And what you end up with in that Premier League, those are the best teams, the teams that are the most high, the best ones in England at that given time. And there
and
are
how many
teams,
are in that? How many in that there, league?
There are 20 teams in the Premier League.
Wow.
But here's the key, is that the teams that are in the Premier League are not set in stone. What happens is there is a process known as promotion and relegation, so that teams from lower divisions, the top ones in lower divisions move up, and the bottom ones in any division move down. So it's not just 20 teams that you classify as being professional teams. You have teams that go all the way down the ladder. I'm pretty sure in the UK, I think they have either six or seven divisions that you go down to. And in theory, a team from the seventh division could, over the course of 7 years, move all the way up to the top one if they're able to. One of the best stories in English soccer, it really worldwide soccer over the last decade, was Leicester City, which is a team that, again, comes from like the opposite of soccer royalty. They won the Premier League in 2015-2016. After pretty much being a nobody before that, they were a team that came out of absolutely nowhere, and their previous highest finish was second place. Guess when they finished second place in the highest division previously?
1955.
1928.
Oh,
so they had gone 90 years without even sniffing a title. A lot of those years, not even spending time in the Premier League. You know, they were down in 2008. They were in the third tier, and over 7 years worked up to the Premier League. And the first year they're back in the Premier League, they win the league. The Super League, the idea is, hey, we're going to pull away from that existing structure where there's, again, so much loyalty to local teams, and because your small team can eventually move up and become great, or your big teams can move down and become bad. And we're going to move away from that whole competition-based platform and say, nope, we want this huge TV contract. We're going to just pull the best teams, and all the rest of you, you got to fend for yourselves, and we'll toss you a couple bucks just to make you feel good, but you're not really the same as us, so don't even try to bother with hanging out with us.
Now, are the 15 teams in the Super League, are they permanently entrenched there, or do they have to compete to stay in that league?
They don't have to compete. And that's what everyone was so upset about. Now, here's what makes it even worse. Most of the teams that were considering doing this don't have European ownership. It's either American owners or owners from the Middle East. And so there's a huge feeling as well that, hey, all of these owners from overseas are pulling their teams out of our competitions. Just to give you an example, Liverpool, owned by Fenway Sports Group, John Henry's ownership group, was one of the teams. Another one, Manchester United, owned by the same guy who owns the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Again, another one of the teams. So it's, you know, there's all this feeling here. And on top of this, the capper on this, just to make it even worse, the whole thing was bankrolled by J.P. Morgan, who was going to make a loan of over $4 billion to fund it. And naturally, whenever you get, you know, an American bank involved in something like this, it's just,
Well, you say was. Is this dead in the water, or is it going to happen?
It blew up yesterday. It quite literally blew up in a span of 48 hours.
What happened? Like, why did it blow up?
They got so much fan backlash that basically it was a combination of fan backlash, and on top of that, the leagues then said, okay, if you're going to leave, then we're going to ban any of your players, not only from our competition, but from competing in international competitions like the World Cup and things like that. So,
how can they do that? That doesn't sound like it's legal.
What do you the leagues decide who can play in them and who can't
in the World Cup?
It's the World Cup is not like, who do you think runs the World Cup? It's FIFA.
FIFA's the most corrupt organization in the world.
They can do whatever they want. You know,
I was just gonna say, yeah,
it's, you know, them and the IOC. It's whatever you want goes. So a combination of all this forced these teams to backtrack in a span of 48 hours and just tuck tail. You've had, you know, presidents of these teams that have stepped down just because of how embarrassing it's been and everything. It's just been a complete failure. So they came into this week thinking, hey, we've got this great new thing to launch. We're going to have $4 billion of funding. We can launch this new business venture. Dead in 48 hours. Didn't even make it half a week.
Well, you know, to be honest. Yeah, I was going
to
say, the way you describe it, it was somewhat elitist, right? And it wasn't going to be good for the sport. I can't imagine that that would have been good for the sport of soccer.
No, it would have been equivalent. The equivalent in the U.S., the most similar you can get is if Alabama, Clemson, USC, Ohio State, Michigan, mm-hmm. and a few other teams in college football said, we're going to start our own league and everyone else stays behind. Yeah. And hey, we'll toss you a few bones. How do you think you'd feel if you were Mississippi State? Or how do you think you'd feel if you were Texas A&M? You'd be sitting there going,
with Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to, has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
No, you guys are acting like jerks. We don't want to hang out. It's just that was the equivalent, but even more so because of that promotion and relegation structure that's so important to European soccer.
Well, thanks for explaining that, because I can't be the only one participating in the show today that does not really follow soccer that closely.
It's such a good story. It's just fantastic how amazingly it blew up. I couldn't be happier. Nothing makes me happier than seeing billionaires' business plans just blow up in their faces.
Oh yeah.
It's just karma. It's wonderful.
Gotcha.
Folks, want to talk to you about the latest guide from Cushing and Dolan. Asset protection and estate planning go hand in hand. Saying you're leaving everything to your kids might sound simple, but it's not, especially if your children have problems of their own. If you're considering the best way to keep your assets in your family while avoiding significant financial consequences down the road, it's time to call Todd Lutzky at Cushing and Dolan. Todd is an expert in estate planning and taxation, and his new guide out right now can help you understand the best ways to leave assets to your beneficiaries. Leaving assets to our children, it's commonplace, but there are important steps that you should take before simply putting their names on the dotted line. Call 866-848-5699 today and ask for Todd's new guide called How to Leave Assets to Your Beneficiaries. This guide will help you understand the safest path to take so that you and your children are firmly protected. The last 12 months, they've been tough, and it'd be easy to overlook these issues as you're planning for later life. Get your guide today by calling 866-848-5699. That's 866-848-5699. Or you can download it from our website, LegalExchangeShow.com.
Rich Bernstein is an all-star money manager, and he says that investors are poorly prepared for inflation. So I'll bite. What does an investor have to do to be prepared for inflation?
Well, I think this is the question that everyone's asking is, if inflation actually shows up, not just for the next few months, which I think is increasingly likely, but if it shows up for the next couple of years, what do you do? Because it's not something investors have had to really deal with at any time since the 1970s. I mean, the last time we had meaningful inflation was heading into 1982, and it was pretty much quashed by the end of the year. So the thing that, you know, we've talked about over the course of this spring is hey, your quote, long duration stocks, your companies that have big capital needs, that have big capital outlays, but are growth oriented, those are ones that can struggle. And they're the ones that did struggle this spring. But also this idea that, hey, there's this base part of an asset allocation to long-term government bonds. That's a tough asset to hold in an inflationary environment. You look at treasuries and how they performed in the 1970s, and it was a horrible decade for them. So, again, it's not something where you say turn your portfolio on its head because of inflation today, because it could end up being passing. I don't think that's the case, but no one quite knows. And so it's just something where I think step one for most investors, audit your portfolio and look at what you own and say, hey, what am I owning and what is the potential exposure if inflation actually shows up, not just for the spring, but into the summer, fall, and into next year? You just have to know what you own to begin with.
Very good. Hey, up next, folks, we're going to be talking about real estate and mortgages on the Financial Exchange.
For the most comprehensive coverage of the economy and the trends on Wall Street, keep it right here on the Financial Exchange Radio Network. Asset protection and estate planning go hand in hand. Saying you're leaving everything to your kids might sound simple, but it isn't, especially if your children have problems of their own. If you're considering the best way to keep your assets in your family while avoiding significant financial consequences down the road, it's time to call Todd Lutsky at Cushing & Dolan. Todd is an expert in estate planning and taxation, and his new guide, out right now, can help you understand the best ways to leave assets to your beneficiaries. Leaving assets to our children is commonplace, but there are important steps that you should take before simply putting their names in the dotted line. Call 866-848-5699 today and ask for Todd's new guide called How to Leave Assets to Your Beneficiaries. This guide will help you understand the safest paths to take so that you and your children are firmly protected. The last 12 months have been rough, and it'd be easy to overlook these issues as you're planning for later life. Get your guide today by calling 866-848-5699. That's 866-848-5699. Or you can download it from our website at LegalExchangeShow.com. Join our text club by texting the word Barry to 63566. Send your first and last name and get involved today. You're listening to the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
There is no shortage of news coming from Wall Street these days, and we've got a brand new podcast that'll break it all down for you. It's Dumb Questions for Smart Money with Paul Lane and Emma David. Find it on our website, financialexchangeshow.com, or subscribe today on Apple, Spotify, and all your favorite podcast apps.
You know, it was only a few weeks ago, Chuck, when we were concerned about rising mortgage rates and the impact that might have on the real estate market. I think the 10-year Treasury got up to, call it 175, maybe even 180. Yeah. Notice this morning it's down to 157 and mortgage applications are up again. Is there a correlation there?
Sure seems to be, especially on the refinance activity, which is where you saw a bunch of the increased demand. Applications to refinance a home up 10% for the week. Refinance share of mortgage activity also increasing to 60% of total apps from 59.2 during the prior week. But you are also getting to the point now where you're just running out of potential customers that have, you know, significant savings that they can unlock through refinancing. Last year, it was obviously easy. There were a ton of people heading into that market. Mm-hmm. But anyone who refinanced last year, hey, they're off the market. Plus, you have people who were, you know, further into a cycle, and now they're saying, well, I'm getting, you know, to the point where I'm just paying more principal and less interest. Do I really want to refinance now? Right. So, you know, the pool is smaller. I will say the trend that I am seeing, which, again, take from it what you will, I'm seeing an awful lot of cash out activity on refinances now.
I thought that was restricted in many ways, though, Chuck, where you couldn't really, you know, in the old days, if you had $1 million home and a $200,000 mortgage, you could take out 800 grand, right? Isn't it limited now as to how much you can cash out on a refi?
It is limited, but you're still seeing a significant uptick in cash out refi activity over the last 3 to 4 months.
Explain why you're concerned about that.
Well, I don't know that it rises to the level of concern now, just because in pure dollar terms, it's still not anywhere near what we saw back in 06, 07. And it's also, as you mentioned, there are more restrictions. It's not, hey, I'm doing a cash out refi for 110% of my home value. It's a far more far more restrictive environment to do a cash out refi in right now. So it's something where it piques my interest a little bit, but it's not at the point where I'm overly concerned about housing at this point, just because, again, overall leverage remains low. Interest payments as a percentage of disposable income remains low. There's nothing right now that suggests we are in any kind of over-leveraged scenario like anything close to what we saw back in 2005 through 2007. This is a case where there's a ton of money that's in the system and it's being used to buy property in a lot of cases, but you're not seeing an excess of leverage in buying those properties. You're just not seeing the same ills that you saw back in the early 2000s.
Yeah. Mutual funds are supposed to offer investors diversification and a little bit more safety than buying individual stocks. Tell us what happened with this Infinity Q Diversified Alpha Fund. It sounds like there may have been some laws broken here, but investors got rinsed.
Yeah, and you don't. This is the first time I've ever seen something like this in a mutual fund available to retail investors.
Yeah, me too.
But it was a fund that was utilizing some derivatives. And long story short, it looks like that in their internal documentation that they used for their accounting, they dramatically mispriced derivatives to the point where when someone from Morgan Stanley was looking at one of the spreadsheets they were using for derivative pricing, this person from Morgan Stanley said that there was no way that they could have possibly priced one of these derivatives. It was physically not possible for it to be priced in this way. So what this tells me is there was most likely some really significant fraud going on in the accounting at this firm, and you're probably going to be seeing some jail time for some people.
It's a big fund. It's a $1.7 billion fund.
Almost usually $2 billion. It's huge.
Yeah, like I've seen frauds before, but usually not on that scale. But Bernie Madoff's dead, so it's been a while. Hey, the markets are rallying. The Dow's up 187 points. The S&P up 23 points. NASDAQ up 105 points. Gold's up $14 an ounce. And crude oil's down 63 cents a barrel. See you tomorrow right here on the Financial Exchange.
Bye. Thank you.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.